Welcome to Skills of the Future, a podcast by Perennial Talent. In this mini-series, we are talking about competencies over coffee.
Welcome to our Skills of the Future podcast. Our theme for this series is talking about competencies over coffee. My name is Dan Vanderwerf. I'm principal consultant and co-founder at Perennial Talent. In this episode, I'll be talking to Nikki Esterhazen about applying competencies across the talent lifecycle. Nikki is an organizational psychologist based in Cape Town, South Africa. In her current role, she specializes in organizational development and change management at The Flash Group, partnering with business stakeholders across the full talent lifecycle. She is passionate about her work and seeing the impact of interventions on employee performance, well-being, team effectiveness, and organizational culture. Nikki, welcome to the episode. I'm so happy to have you on today.
Oh, thanks so much, Dan. Thank you for the opportunity. It's really, really exciting to be able to talk to you about something that I'm very passionate about.
Awesome. My pleasure. So I usually like to start these off with a little icebreaker type question just to get the conversation flowing. So can you tell me about the best thing that you have watched or read lately?
Yeah, so lately I have been very excited about the Formula One season starting again. Nice. And I've been watching the new season of Drive to Survive on Netflix. So I say watching it, I have finished it and very excited to watch the teams compete in the first race of the season this weekend. So Yeah, hoping that Red Bull comes out on top. Yeah,
awesome.
Really excited about that.
Very exciting. So switching gears to our more competency focused questions, what workforce challenges or opportunities have you primarily used competencies to address?
So I've applied competencies in quite a few organizations for different reasons. The first time I started looking into competencies was because I was in the process of developing a learning and development framework for the organization. And I was trying to find an effective way of conducting a skills gap analysis. So this is when I decided to implement a competency framework for the first time as a learning and development tool. So what we set out to do was identify all of the competencies that would be necessary for success in the business. And then we mapped which behaviors were necessary for success in different levels in the organization, as well as in different departments. So that was a very significant part of the process, as we didn't only have an overall view of the competencies, but also in terms of how they differed between sales and HR, for example, and also how they differed within a department. So for example, if I moved from a junior to a more senior role, how did those requirements change in order for me to be successful at the new level? So using competencies in this way added so much value to our process, as we were able to have really focused discussions with the employees regarding their personal development, aligned to the competencies that were identified for their role. So those discussions helped us to identify what might be their areas of strength, where might they be on target, and where were their potential areas for improvement. And then we were able to plan development initiatives around those. So it was a really incredible way to utilize competencies for a skills gap analysis. And then we were really able to identify those development needs more effectively. So we knew that when we were putting an individual on a training program, it was targeted to their unique development needs, as opposed to having a blanket intervention for a team, which saved money for the organization as well.
Absolutely. Yeah, that sounds awesome. So the competencies really provide that structure and enable those focused conversations around learning and development. That makes a lot of sense.
100%. And it just adds a lot of rigor to the process as well, and to make it more targeted and structured, like you said. Something
exactly.
else I wanted to mention about the project was how I linked performance data to the competency framework and then subsequently into the personal development plan discussions as well. Mm. So after the project had initially kicked off, I wanted to analyze our prior performance discussion data in the business. So we had, at that time, we were reviewing performance on a quarterly basis, and we were very lucky that the information we were gathering was really valid and reliable in terms of how individuals were performing across the business. So what I did was reviewed employees over those three discussion periods, and I tried to identify where were areas that they were performing consistently lower over that period of time. And then I also analyzed what areas are we assessing in these performance discussions. So what are the key performance areas that the person is being assessed on? What I was then able to do was to identify what competencies or behaviors were linking to the key performance areas. So for example, when we were looking at our call center or customer service staff, if an employee was performing consistently lower across client service or customer orientation, we were then trying to see what behaviors were leading to them performing lower. The benefit of that was in the follow-up performance discussion with that employee, in the follow-up personal development plan discussion, we were able to bring in this data to try get an understanding of what might be holding them back in terms of performing higher on this, and then also aligning development initiatives to that. So it was a really layered approach and a lot of information that was included, but again, just really ensured that whatever initiatives we were putting in place, we knew that they were going to have a demonstrated impact for that employee.
Mm-hmm. Very cool. And it's awesome that you focus on the underlying behaviors, because that's really the most useful part of that, right? Like if you were having this performance talk with an employee and you say, you know, you really need to improve your client focus. Well, that's too vague. Like, what does that actually look like? Like, what is the behavior that I need to either change or improve to enable me to deliver a better client experience? Yeah, that's very cool.
Exactly. And I know that for that project that I worked on, one of the benefits for me was the fact that it was a relatively smaller organization. So there were roughly 60 employees, and I was able to get very involved in the talent processes. So I was having one-on-ones with all of the staff and seeing how that project unfolded over a year's time. But in many other cases, it might not be possible for the HR team to be that involved with development discussions. So it was really wonderful for me in that case to see the impact on the ground that our work was having.
Very cool. So with any competency initiative, there's usually a lot going on and a lot of moving parts. So I'm wondering if you can tell me about some of the obstacles that you might have encountered when you started to use competencies across the talent lifecycle.
Yeah. So if I think about obstacles, something that comes to mind is the challenge of understanding the unique requirements of the role when we are working in quite large, complex organizations. So for example, at Flash, it is a really complex fintech organization with a large number of departments, each requiring a very unique set of skills. So from finance to tech to legal, fraud, risk, compliance, like the list is really endless. And in order to have an impact, we have to understand and validate what is necessary for success in each of these roles, as well as what's necessary for success in the future in quite a rapidly changing environment. So the challenge there for us really is time, and also remaining aware of changes that are going to impact what skills we need to be successful in future. A way that we are getting around this at the moment is by grouping roles into job families where similar competencies are required for success. So this enables our processes to work a bit quicker when we are reviewing competencies for selection or development processes. But then when we do it in that way, the conversations we have with line managers and employees become even more important, mm-hmm. as they will really help us to contextualize the unique needs and the development requirements as a result of that.
Absolutely. Yeah, and that makes a lot of sense to start a bit broader. We usually recommend that as well. Like sometimes people even start with core competencies, which are those that are linked to kind of your organizational vision and values. So they would be expected across every role. So that's kind of like more broad things like teamwork or innovation or communication. Yes. And then to your point, going that level a little bit more specific where you group roles into job families. So maybe all of these sales roles require 2 to 3 of those sales job family competencies, and all of the finance roles require 2 to 3 of those more financy type competencies, which is a kind of nice way to structure it and less overwhelming than going down to the each role level. So that that makes a lot of sense to keep it kind of at a manageable scope. And then down the road, you can always add the more job specific things if and when that makes sense to do so.
Exactly. And that's another thing I was going to mention to overcome it is by also focusing on those categories. So mm-hmm. having broad ranges of competencies and creating almost a shortlist from those. So for example, if these are thinking competencies, these are interpersonal competencies or leadership competencies, and then helping line managers to select from those. Because I think that another challenge that sometimes happens when we are using competencies for selection purposes is that a line manager may give you a set of requirements that is a really long and extensive list. And when we do that, we may exclude individuals in a hiring process that are actually suitable for a role. So I think really sense checking during your process is so important to get mm-hmm. to the essence of what is necessary for success, that without this, the person is going to stumble. And then to identify what is the wish list? What are the things that are desirable, that these are nice to have, but mm-hmm. without them, the person is still going to be able to be successful.
Exactly. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. It's kind of counterintuitive, but I always say that when you're doing these competencies, you're trying to describe what minimal acceptable performance looks like. So you're not trying to capture the like all-star. It's just someone who can kind of do the requirements of the role at kind of the lowest level that is acceptable for the role.
100%. And that's why it's so important when defining it is to focus on the role, not a person mm-hmm. that they have in mind. So really keeping the focus on the job and not the person in the job.
Exactly. Okay, so we've talked a bit about like how competencies are awesome to use and all the benefits for using them and some of the challenges for doing so as well. So some people might be kind of scared or intimidated to start using competencies in their company. So can you kind of talk us through some of the threats or pain points if organizations don't take the time to clearly define the competencies that are needed for success? What are some of the things that can go wrong if you don't have them in place?
100%. I think for me, the saying garbage in, garbage out comes to mind. I think that it's really important that competencies are validated for a particular role in order to be able to select, assess, and develop accordingly. Mm-hmm. So competencies are not going to have an impact if they are not linked to outcomes and performance. So if we have not defined what's needed, we may select individuals who are not aligned to the requirements of the role. And I know I already mentioned that we may exclude some who may have been successful, but I think it's important just to reflect for a moment on what I mean by selecting someone who may not be aligned. So if I think about our sales team, for example, and what types of behaviors would make someone quite successful in that role. Things like influence or persuasion, drive and grit really come to mind. So if we know that that is the typical profile of a really successful salesperson, and we assess a candidate for selection using psychometric assessments, and we see that their preferences are almost the opposite of what we are looking for. So it's someone that is very uncomfortable with persuasion, someone who is not highly resilient, they're not likely to push through if they experience setbacks, and someone who might not really be as result-oriented and driven. What would happen if we actually put that candidate into the role is that they are not going to be motivated to buy the role. And as a result, they're not going to be as successful. They're not going to put in the energy to influence or challenge someone when they get shut down. And as I mentioned, they might be uncomfortable with influencing as well. So in that case, we get someone that is almost a square peg in a round hole. They're not going to get energy from the behaviors that we require for them to be successful. And they're going to be unhappy at the end of the day as well. If they are forced to act in a way that is so far out of their comfort zone or default setting, as I like to say, then you're going to have an employee who's demotivated, who's tired, and they're not going to be able to meet the requirements of the role.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. So you're going to end up with unmotivated people who can't really do the role the way that the role is meant to be accomplished, which is obviously not a good thing. So what do you think organizations can do to avoid that? Are there any like tools or programs you think they can focus on to avoid some of those threats?
Definitely. So my first suggestion would be to ensure that you are getting buy-in from your organization, your leaders, as well as line managers who are usually involved in people processes, as their valuable input is what's really going to make the process successful. So one of the tools that I would suggest is conducting job analysis. It's a very effective tool to gather data about a role, and it can be conducted with the person who's currently fulfilling the role, as well as the person's line manager, to understand exactly what the role entails and the skills and behaviors that would make someone successful. So we know that business leaders are busy, but if they understand why this process is important and how it will improve their processes going forward, they will be a lot more willing to assist and provide input when they see that the impact it has. Another tool that we are using during the selection process is psychometric assessments, which are able to provide a valid and reliable measure of the competencies necessary for success. So it's wonderful for us because we know that whatever is stated in the competency framework, we are able to validly and reliably measure that. Now, it's just important to note that assessments are one piece of the puzzle and decisions are not based solely on them, but they provide us really valuable data and insights to our process, which we can then use to probe in further follow-up interviews. And they add a lot of value and rigor. And they can also, once the person has been onboarded, be used as part of development discussions as well. So the competency framework, it's a really important foundation, but those are some of the tools that we can help to elicit and understand the behavior, as well as measure those behaviors in the business.
Awesome. That is some fantastic advice. So we might have some listeners out there who are kind of starting to use competencies for the first time or thinking about starting to use competencies. So I'm wondering if you have any additional advice for those types of people out there who might be looking to start implementing competencies for the first time.
Definitely. I think it can be daunting the first time if it's something that you don't have a lot of prior knowledge about. But I think it's also important to reflect and realize that it is such an exciting opportunity to be able to implement competencies and a competency framework in the business. If I think of Flash, at the moment, we are developing our competency framework and applying it not only to recruitment and selection processes, but also to our succession planning model. So once you have designed it, you can really adjust and adapt it in so many incredible ways. And now it's also going to help us identify leadership potential in the business and to craft unique development plans to set people up for success. So something I did want to mention, if you are looking into using competencies, is to also reflect and remember that the work that we do regarding competencies and our people strategy, it should always be aligned to and supporting the business strategy. So before starting research on potential competency models, I think it's also beneficial to take time to understand where your business is heading and how to align your people to that vision. For example, if I think of Flash, we are a business that is continuously changing and evolving, identifying new channels and products that will set us apart from competitors. So in order to be successful in this environment, someone really has to be adaptable, resilient, and innovative in order to push boundaries despite setbacks. And understanding your organizational culture, as you mentioned, Dan, is also so important. Especially if you are in a scaling business, hiring the right people who are aligned to those organizational values will automatically help to reinforce the culture you are trying to create. So understanding what sets your culture apart and makes it successful will also enable you to design your framework accordingly. So including things such as teamwork and collaboration, like you've mentioned. So I would suggest while doing research and getting an understanding of different categories of competencies is important. The real magic happens when you're able to combine that with your knowledge and understanding of your business as well.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And I love what you said about making sure it's aligned to the business strategy. So kind of like figuring out what's the purpose, like why are we trying to implement a competency project? Is it to hire better people, or is it to improve our learning and development, or is it to give people clarity around career pathing options, or is it maybe all of those things? So when you kind of identify what the need is, then that can also help provide some structure and clarity and scope to what you're trying to do as well. Makes a lot of sense.
Exactly. So, I mean, if I think of when we've used it, as I said, it can be a learning and development tool. So the first time I started researching competencies was for a skills gap analysis, but now we are applying it to recruitment and selection. We actually implemented it in our onboarding as well. So helping line managers to understand, based on this employee's unique preferences, what can you do to get the best out of them? And then also in development and leadership development and succession. So yeah, we're having a lot of fun with competencies at Flash.
Awesome. Yeah, and what's awesome is like once they're in place and you have those competency profiles for all of your roles, you can start using it for like almost every talent application. So that's really awesome.
Exactly.
All right. So that was my last question for you today. So Nikki, I want to thank you so much for sharing your advice and insights on all things competencies. Thank you so much.
Oh, thanks so much, Dan. Thank you for reaching out and for this opportunity. I really appreciate it.